It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, the House could vote on the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement by the end of the week. We'll get the latest from Washington.
First, the news from the Wisconsin legislature. Yesterday, the Senate and the Assembly passed a slew of bills, some controversial, ranging from a 20-week abortion ban to removing the 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases.
Here to break down the news for us is Sean Johnson, WPR State Government Reporter. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the 20-week abortion ban. This bill passed in the state Senate yesterday. Did this break down along party lines as it was expected to?
It broke down exactly along party lines. All of the Senate's 19 Republicans voted for the bill. All of the Senate's 14 Democrats voted against it. So there was nobody that split either way on this one. And it would ban abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy, a move that the supporters said is aimed at preventing the infliction of pain on a fetus. But this is something that was pretty hotly disputed by Wisconsin's medical community when this was up for a public hearing.
Now, this has been a contentious bill in Wisconsin. What sticking points were brought up in the debate before the vote?
Quite a few. I mean, this is a bill that has no exceptions for pregnancies that result from rape or incest. So you often see those in abortion-related bills that come up at the Wisconsin Capitol. They're not here. And so the sponsors have said that's because Senator Mary Lozick actually used the term that this would be a late-term elective abortion. And she said that people who would get an abortion as a result of rape or incest would do it earlier in their pregnancy. But that's definitely one of the big contentious pieces of this. Another is that the Wisconsin medical community is roundly united against this. Doctors testified that it's creating terms that the medical community doesn't use in terms of how it measures what is 20 weeks from fertilization. The doctors were saying from the Wisconsin Medical Society, this idea that you're advancing that a fetus can feel pain at 20 weeks conflicts with what the American Medical Association says, with what a National Association of Obstetricians says, that this conflicts with all the research out there. And so they were very strongly against this. And then there was also this provision that was added to the bill yesterday that would go some ways toward addressing concerns over what happens if the life of a mother is in danger. But the wording of it is a little bit vague, and critics of the bill say that what it's going to end up doing is that a doctor would have to wait until a mother's health had pretty seriously deteriorated until the doctor decided to perform abortion in order to save the life of the mother.
Now, another aspect of all of this is whether, if passed, this bill could stand up to a challenge in court. Do we know where that stands and what the thought is on that?
What we know is what has happened elsewhere, and elsewhere laws like these have not stood. The Journal Sentinel did an article yesterday, talked to legal experts around the country, including a conservative lawyer in Wisconsin and a legal expert at Harvard. They all said there's no way that this passes at the district court or the appellate court level, that this would go directly against the guidance that the U.S. Supreme Court has given when it comes to abortion laws and how restrictive they can be. So, it may very well be that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, would revisit the issue of abortion, possibly on a case involving a law like the one that they're pushing here in Wisconsin. But as of right now, this would be found unconstitutional.
And what happens next? Is this likely to pass the Assembly?
All we know is that Assembly Speaker said that his members have not caucused on it, meaning Republicans in the Assembly haven't met privately on it to discuss this. Speaker Voss says he's a big proponent of this bill. He says that, even if it is something that's going to face hundreds of thousands of dollars in court challenges, that's worth it to him. He says you have to weigh the importance of the bill that they're looking at against those costs. So the speaker's a big proponent of this. He's not promising that it's going to come up for a vote, but given the party line vote in the Senate yesterday, you wouldn't be surprised if the same thing happened in the Assembly.
We're talking right now with WPR state government reporter Sean Johnson, talking about the latest on movement of bills in the state Senate and Assembly, and some more action there with legislation. The Assembly voted to end the waiting period for handgun purchases, right? There had been a 48-hour waiting period. Why did supporters of this measure say it's necessary?
They basically made a couple arguments. One is that they said that 48-hour waiting period was put in there because it used to take longer to get a background check completed. And now that everything's electronic, a background check happens a lot faster. You don't need to say you're going to have this 2-day waiting period between when somebody purchases a gun and when they get it. So that was sort of their first argument, is that you can do this faster now. The second argument was they kind of answered your question with a question. One of the reasons we had this waiting period is that it's a cooling off period between when somebody buys a gun and when they receives it. So if they went in to buy a gun angry, or they went in to buy a gun depressed, you have this cooling off period before when that gun is actually in hand. But the sponsors of this bill are saying, well, I think the question should be, why should there be a cooling off period? This is actually something that is an inconvenience for people who want to buy a gun, was their argument, that some people in parts of the state that are far from a gun shop might have to drive a long ways to get a gun, and it would be inconvenient for them to have to make that drive twice.
Now, again, has this been going strictly along party lines, or have there been any crossovers?
What we've had on this bill is we've had a couple voice votes. So in the Senate, you don't have a record of yeses and nos in the Senate on this bill. You don't have a record of yeses and nos on this bill in the Assembly. It passed on a voice vote in both chambers. There are different reasons that parties will decide we're okay with a voice vote on a particular issue. It could be on this one that there were a number of Democrats who were going to peel off and vote for this bill, despite objections from Democrats in urban districts who very strongly objected to it, say it's going exactly the wrong way on gun control. So if Democrats were going to lose a lot of votes on this, it might be something where they just decided to kind of cut their losses and do a voice vote. Could also be that maybe there were some Democrats in rural swing districts who were inclined to vote against it, and that can be a politically tough vote for them. So, we don't know exactly why voice votes happen on stuff like this, but we know that it was going to pick up some bipartisan support usually.
Now, this one passed the state Senate in April, and that leaves the governor. Is he pretty much poised to sign off on this one?
I think you can pretty much lock it in that he's going to sign this. He hasn't said the words, "I will sign this bill," but he has spoken favorably of it. This is something that the NRA likes. He is running for president. For him to veto a bill when he's in a Republican primary that the NRA supports would be unheard of.
Now, yesterday, the state Senate approved Governor Walker's appointment of Michael Grebe to the University of Wisconsin System Board of Regents. And this comes at a time when the regents are taking a lot of scrutiny thanks to a bill that would strip tenure protections from state law. So how big a deal is this appointment?
It's sort of a bigger deal given the circumstances and the timing of the appointment. As you mentioned, this is happening when the university is going through a lot of changes, and changes that are broadly aimed at making the university be run more along the line of a business with more top-down management, maybe less input from the employees or faculty than has been had before. And so now you have this appointment of Michael Grebe, who he's not just any person who works for a manufacturing business in Wisconsin. He is the son of Michael W. Grebe, who is the chair of Governor Walker's gubernatorial campaigns And beyond that is the president and CEO of the Bradley Foundation, which is a conservative powerhouse in the state of Wisconsin and nationally. But here in Wisconsin especially, Bradley Foundation really provides the financial infrastructure for these conservative groups that have helped advance and sometimes form Governor Walker's agenda. So, you know, he is very connected. You know, that's an understatement there. Michael M. Grebe, who was confirmed to this region appointment the other day, and some of the statements that he made in his confirmation hearing had Democrats concerned. He was comparing the university to a business and said, you know, if you have duplicative degree programs at multiple campuses throughout the system, maybe it doesn't make sense to have them everywhere. Maybe you cut them on some campuses if you have them somewhere else. He said it's like a manufacturer might not manufacture the same product at multiple locations. And that rubbed some Democrats the wrong way. They said the university is not a manufacturing plant.
Sean, thanks a lot for talking today.
You're welcome.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR state government reporter. He was with us for a roundup of the latest action in the state Senate and Assembly.